Mark, you fought an election court, of course, in 2004. Is Bill Shorten going to be one of those opposition leaders that doesn't even get to an election?
Oh, no, I think he'll get to the election because of Labor's leadership rules, which mean you can only turf him out with a vote of the membership combined with the caucus. So at least Labor's got some stability. But as I argue in the Financial Review this morning, Bill Shorten needs to get out there and fight on issues that actually matter to people. He's messing around with flim-flam symbolic issues like gay marriage, Indigenous constitutional recognition, but he's not established a profile on the big things that matter to people, such as living standards, budget repair, border protection, terrorism control, and his polling numbers are declining, and unless he gets out there and he's seen as a fighter on something that really matters to him, people just write him off as a non-event.
And he's got more problems emerging because of his time as leader of the AWU as well. It's not going to help him, is it?
No, it's a bad look for the reason that the AWU, historically, within the Labor movement, has been the softest union, the union most likely to cuddle up to the bosses. And part of that, obviously, is involved getting money off the companies one way or another to assist the union financially to build up its numbers at Labor Party conferences. And already we've seen a couple of deals where that process has occurred at the expense of the workers themselves. So it's this vexed problem for Labor where you've got union leaders doubling up as factional warlords inside the ALP. They've got a clear conflict of interest, and unfortunately Bill Shorten is going to be raked over the coals about this conflict.
What's the other problem here? Isn't there an underlying issue that we don't really know what he stands for? And he's not a great public performer either, is he?
Well, that's the issue I mentioned. Standing for something is essential. And sure, you can bounce around with issues like gay marriage and the Republic and things that fiddle with the Constitution. But for the average Australian, worried about their kids' education, worried about productivity, living standards, worried about the federal budget, worried about border protection issues, you know, the symbolic stuff doesn't count for a can of beans. You get outside the electorate of Sydney and Graindler, right there in the Sydney CBD, and people just don't talk about those symbolic issues because they've got real practical, tangible challenges in life, and that's what Shorten needs to address.
Well, at one stage, early this week and late last week, he was trying to make hay out of the move by the government to pay off people smugglers. Yet that's another issue that people out there are not talking about.
No, people, I think, are happy that the boats have stopped. Mm. And it really shouldn't be a secret in Canberra that since the Tampa incident in 2001, our spy agency, ASIS, has had operatives in Indonesia trying to disrupt the people smuggling trade. Now, you know, some of the spy activities are probably illegal. There's probably an exchange of money that's been going on for a decade or more. And I don't think it's something that needs to come into the public arena. The main thing the public's interested in is stopping the boats, and from a humanitarian viewpoint, of course, when you stop the boats, you stop the drownings. And those Greens, I don't know how people like Hanson Young and Senator Di Natale sleep at night trying to advocate open border policies, knowing it brings the boats in again and inevitably hundreds if not thousands of people, women and children, drown on the sea. How do these people sleep at night advocating policies which inevitably will lead to women and children drowning on the oceans between Australia and Indonesia.
Hmm, that's right. Now, you were talking about the issues that people do not talk about. They want to talk about things happening in their backyard. You've got something going on in your backyard or down your way, haven't you, at Camden?
Yes, the historic township of Camden. Last Sunday, there was a rally of 600 concerned residents who were objecting to the local council's plans of putting in traffic lights and multi-storey parking. Because people who know...
Oh, the horror! The horror!
Well, Camden is a great heritage centre. It's the birthplace of Australia's agricultural industries through the legacy of John MacArthur. And the town there is just like a country town. And if you bring in the traffic lights, you bring in the multi-storey parking, it's the suburbanisation of Camden. It becomes like another little Liverpool or a little Campbelltown. Now, the bigger centres have got their place, but surely in Sydney we can preserve country and heritage values in a centre without thinking that progress has to be suburbanisation. So it's a real destruction of camp.
Oh, this is NIMBYism, isn't it?
Well, it is. It is in my backyard. But
What's wrong with a set of traffic lights?
Well, Gary, it's going to destroy the country feel.
It's the beginning of the end.
Well, it's going to destroy the country feel of Camden. And if you're interested in the good use of public money, then you should be aware there's no traffic report that says the lights are necessary. What the council's doing, it's leaving its admin centre in Camden and going to Oran Park. And on the way out, they're trying to enhance the value of their land, their own property, by putting access into their street through the traffic lights. So as they're leaving Camden, they're actually destroying its heritage value. So the council's got a conflict of interest. It's an atrocious waste of public money, and it destroys the heritage and country values of a town that the local residents love. There were people there aged over 100 on Sunday protesting. And for people who love their town, they don't want it to change that way.
Right. So,
but it has changed in the last 200 years anyway, hasn't it?
Well, not a lot. And I think that's a good thing. We don't have to have massive urban sprawl and suburbanisation of every single centre. In Western Sydney, there's been a lot of heritage lost over the years, I can tell you. At least in Camden, it's been preserved, and I wish the council would pull its head in and continue to look after the centre as it is.
Well, you could do it. Yeah, you could just rope off certain sections of Camden. You could keep it as old Sydney town almost, couldn't you?
Well, Gary, I reckon you wouldn't have been to Camden in your life.
I have been through Camden, Mark.
Have you?
Been through Camden. What does that mean?
Well, this is
he's driven through it.
And I blinked and I missed it.
Guy acting about an issue that you don't know about.
I knew if I kept pushing the buttons.
Tell the listeners, what does it mean to be through Camden?
Well, what are you trying to preserve in Camden? Camden's not an old 200-year-old town that's never changed.
We need you down there, Gary. We need you to go down there.
Gary, you've got to tell the listeners, what does it mean that you've been through Camden?
I've driven through Camden. I didn't get out because there was no service station. There was no McDonald's.
He's driven through it and there were no traffic lights.
Bring in the traffic lights.
No traffic lights. That's your Speedy Gonzales. Whoosh.
Yeah, Mark, you were watching State of Origin last night. What did you make of it?
Well, I thought it was good to see an open, attractive game. I was worried that Melbourne would see another stodgy, low-scoring match, but there were 44 points, the right result, of course, for New South Wales. It was actually the highest-scoring game since Game 3 in 2011, and it was the first time New South Wales scored over 20 points and won the game in 6 years. So wasn't it good the referees kept the teams apart? They stopped the Queenslanders getting offside and all their spoiling tactics, and it was a great open advertisement for rugby league, so we need more like it.
I think that's right. Now, all right, let's get to this because we've been waiting for this one. Here we go.
At the Movies with Mark Latham.
Now, looking forward to this, Mark. You've been sitting in a darkened cinema for about 2 hours watching dinosaurs roam the earth. It must have felt like watching a documentary on a Labor Party national conference.
Yeah, or Clive Palmer and Dinosaur Park, although his ones don't move a lot. But look, if you love a movie where the dinosaurs chase people, this one's for you. It's got all the charm and appeal and excitement of the old Jurassic Park franchise. In fact, it is a direct replica of Jurassic Park franchise, built around the story that to attract new visitors to the park, which has reopened since the last disaster. They construct a DNA-modified new dinosaur, a monstrous dinosaur, and surprise, surprise, it gets out. So once it's out, it causes a lot of havoc, and the story unfolds in the manner with which we're familiar. So I give the movie 3.5 stars because it's very well made, very exciting, well worth watching, but you've got to take some points off because there wasn't a lot of originality in devising the script. They just got the old Jurassic Park script with Sam Neill and that mob and just changed a few words.
And there couldn't possibly be another sequel. I mean, what business would go through this twice? They wouldn't dare do it a third time, would they? Unless they were being run by Clive Palmer.
Yeah, I think that's the next one. It's the Clivosaurus.
That would be good, wouldn't it?
But it's a good action movie, is it?
Yeah, well worth seeing. I know you've been talking about it through the week. It's a lot better than Aloha and some of the rubbish that's around. I'd recommend people go and watch it. If you love the old Jurassic Park, you've got to see this one.